Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind. I'm your host, Eric Davis, and we're going to continue our conversations about the cultures of consciousness. Today we're kind of doing something a little different. Our guest wasn't able to make it, but instead of canceling it, we're going to just have a conversation among the co-hosts. And part of this has been instigated by the curious matter of Diane Reedy, court stenographer, the Congress, who went off on a very curious rant. And this curious rant, which we'll get into more detail in a moment, reminds me of a curious dimension of our world today. And the way I think about it is that as more and more of our statements, actions, attitudes, expressions, concepts become recorded and interlinked, mediated, watched over, that the space for curious synchronicities and odd, almost sort of eruptions from the collective id become more and more available. And part of the reason that there's so much conspiracy culture today, so many thoughts about hidden plots or mind control or various other fringe ideas, which really aren't so fringe, because as soon as you start to pay attention to them, you realize that they permeate society and that many mainstream political views rest or are right next to or allied with far more extreme and unusual views, that this kind of thinking is just an inevitable outgrowth of our increasingly interlinked and synchronized society. And one of the reasons that it's important to study and understand the world of magic, of synchronicities, of magical thinking, if you want, of oracles, correspondences, and the whole sort of mysterious lore of the Hermetic and magical traditions, as well as other traditions around the world, shamanism being a major one, that whether or not you end up believing that there is any real substance to this, in the sense that a rational scientific person would recognize, it doesn't really matter, because these modes of thought are available, and they are things that people experience every day in the media, in their own mind stream, that the difference between a ordinary quote-unquote rational person moving through an ordinary day and someone moving through a world of magical synchronicities is very thin, the difference between these worlds, and that as things get weird and things get confusing, and there's a sense at once that we're moving towards extraordinary concentrations of power and reality mediated through large corporations, the internet, the surveillance state, and at the same time a sense of kind of fragmentation of meaning, of everybody sort of drifting towards their own private Idaho, that this kind of magical thinking is going to be and is already more and more part of the weave of social reality itself. So whether or not you want to hold on to rational critique, skepticism, anti-supernatural thinking, which is fine. I have a lot of respect for that. I spend a lot of time in that zone as well. It's going to be important to wrestle with this stuff. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So with that, we're going to bring on our co-host here, Maja Dau. And Maja's going to tell us a little bit more about this mysterious event in the Congress. Hey, Maja, how's it going?
It's going good, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, it's so funny. Like, the synchronicities are just popping because I didn't go into the whole story, and I'm not going to do it, but I just talked to a friend of mine who you know, he surfs the edge. He's uh-huh. kind of bipolar. He's been deeply crazy. He's been gotten his stuff together. You know, he lives in that zone. That's part of his reality. And he's a wonderful guy. He's super smart, very articulate, and can be pretty manic. And sometimes in his manic phase, it's kind of fascinating because while I can see the quote-unquote delusion that's animating it, it's incredibly creative and charismatic, and sometimes tremendously insightful about what's going on. And he had this whole tale about how even though he's on his meds and things are working, you know, going reasonably well for him, he had participated in a kind of a ceremony, a ritual that was done partly out of anger and frustration, but it corresponded with the floods in Colorado in a way that was deeply disturbing to him because part of his anger was directed at the state of Colorado for various shenanigans that they were trying to pull on him. And talking to him was really weird because I realized that while it was important to communicate to him that this was not his fault, that it was he was not responsible for this, nonetheless, it was sort of odd because his, you know, it was right at the moment when the worst of the flooding hit that he was doing this ritual, and so it wasn't like I want to deny that there's some kind of connection, but it's just that the way that these connections happen, it's not a causal situation. You know, it's a different kind of cause. So anyway, I just had this conversation, not the thing I would normally talk about on the show, although it really, I've been thinking about it a lot because I do feel like there's more weird connections between our private lives and these sort of larger forces right now, and maybe that's my own little story. But then you had this very interesting tale that now we're going to hear, which is sort of not unrelated. So
it's very related.
Yeah.
And I think an important thing, like you said, when discussing these, it's not like saying like, oh, I made this happen or it was because of me, but look at how amazing that these two things happened at the same time. And I think, you know, there can be lots of explanations. It could be not that, you know, you made something happen, but that maybe you as an individual felt the force of nature coming and then it triggered something in you, like a dog feels an earthquake coming and then has a reaction, you know?
Exactly.
I think the problem with people's reactions with a lot of this stuff is they take it egotistically because we're, you know, trapped in our dumb little brains, and then we think people react because of us. We think that, you know, the world revolves around us. So we tend to take it from that messianic standpoint instead of saying, oh, look, this huge event happened and I did this thing at the same time. Well, maybe it's because this huge world event had a lot of energy accumulated around it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also because even if we enter into a world where we're cultivating synchronicities or interested in seeing these other kinds of connections, people still hold on to this idea that they're in control.
Yeah.
And that their own motivations, their own inspirations, their own you know curious thoughts. Well, those too have their causes, have their the forces that they're linked to that aren't necessarily coming out of the person as an agent. So it gets very peculiar and not, you know, not unnerving to kind of contemplate these things. But why don't you tell your tale?
So what happened to me, which was, again, I'd like to just reiterate, you can think what you want about what it means or, you know, all that, but these events actually happened. So I'm relating this purely for the purposes of like, wow, look what happened. It's not like this means magic is real or anything else. People can come to those conclusions on their own.
Yeah.
So I am doing a ritual exorcism of the United States government. And it came to me that, you know, that's something I would like to perform in service to try to help the situation. A lot of people, you know, this happened when the government was still in a state of shutdown. It was on October 16th that I made it public on Facebook. I post all my events on Facebook as some folks know that follow my stuff just because it's easy to do, you know. So the government was still shut down. And, you know, I was thinking, well, all these people are pissed at Congress and pissed at the president. And there was, you know, that website, FU Congress, went up. And so a lot of people don't realize they're just sending a bunch of negative energy towards the government, right? Albeit maybe there was all this negative stuff coming out of the government. So what do people do? They just decide to feed it more negative energy. It's like, let's just put more food into what's already causing the problem. So I figured, how about do a little healing ritual for the government, which is what the exorcism was about. A lot of people had bad reactions to it, and, you know, we're all like, oh, you can't do that, blah, 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 whatever. But that was what I decided to do. So I was putting it up on Facebook. I wrote up the thing. I mentioned that I'm performing a mantra in order to get ready. I'm doing it on November 1st, which is All Saints Day, and that was also the day that the debt crisis was going to happen, right? That was the day we were going to default, was on November 1st. Now they've pushed it to February, but at the time, that was what was happening. So I put it up. I say my mantra is one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all, was the mantra I chose because I wanted to try to unify and, you know, just pick up on those good parts of the philosophy of the United States, because there's some amazing stuff in our government. I mean, there's a lot of heroes. There's a lot of, you know, virtue that has gone into it as well, even though everyone tries to demonize politics for one reason or another. So that's my mantra, and I put it up there. I put it up at 6:15 Pacific Standard Time. And then, you know, people are reacting to it. They're posting about it. It kind of went nuts, like blew up all over the place. In about an hour, someone posts that the shutdown has ended. Now, okay, that's a pretty big synchronicity right there. That on the same day, the government had been shut down, right, for like 16 days. I think they shut it down around the 1st of October. And that it would happen within the hour of my posting this event, I thought was a little strange, right? Obviously, they've been working on it the whole time, blah, blah, blah. It's not totally crazy, but it's a little odd that it would happen so soon, like not just the same day, but about an hour after. And this was at 10:22 at night, mind you, on the East Coast. This was like in the middle of the night that they did it. It wasn't like, you know, morning work for Congress. This was already like late into the evening. So I thought that was kind of weird. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, maybe it's working. So then after I find that synchronicity, a friend of mine posts on there that this stenographer had freaked out and had a total crazy rant, is what they were letting it out on the media as, right? Court stenographer has outbursts. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, it was so weird. It was crazy. And I click on the link, and I watch it, and I just, like, freaked out because the soundbite of what she said in front of Congress, she said the words, one nation under God. So it got, like, freaky at that point. So I'm like, okay, there was, like, a bajillion things she could have said. But the same words that I had chosen specifically for the mantra is what she said. And actually, I had gotten flack for having the one nation under God. Some person had posted, meanwhile, before this came to light, there was a whole fight on my Facebook event page. He wanted to leave out the God part because he thought that was terrible or whatever. And I was like, no, man, I got to leave God in my exorcism. I don't know how you do an exorcism without God, but...
We can talk more about that event too, because it's very peculiar. I've been, you know, online and looking at some of the conspiracy sites and following this weird outburst, because just the whole quality of the outburst is, you know, in a way, for me, it represents how beneath the surface of business as usual, even if it's an extreme situation like the government shutdown, there's still this sort of layer of like, the ordinary news reality. Well, you know, the Tea Party is creating a division inside the Republican Party, and here we see that kind of world. But beneath it, there's all this stuff going on. There's all this anger and fear and refusal. I mean, just this huge world of emotions and projections and imagination. And it's a crazy world. It's a whole, you know, it's a whole like dream zone of political
yeah.
reality that sort of adheres to the kind of news level of like what's actually happening in the mechanism of the politics and who's voting and how much time, da 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 da. And you get these moments where something like pops up, and when it pops up, sometimes it speaks. And what, you know, when it speaks, it's often very resonant and very weird. So like for me, the first part that you timed, that you did your thing just when it happened, that's like odd. You know, you get a little shiver down the spine. You know, it's like, wow, that's sort of weird. Who knows, you know, what, you know, what's going on. But somehow the fact that there's this phrase echoing, and it's not just any phrase.
Right.
It's one nation under God, so you have both the invocation of some kind of higher power, whatever that means to you or the, you know, the person arguing with you on Facebook or the woman who makes the outburst, but also the one nation. That
yeah.
really struck me because, like, one of the things that's so frustrating and scary and depressing about our politics now is this, you know, this kind of sense of breakdown, of like the incapacity of our country to think of itself as one nation, that it's
yeah.
so deeply riven, deeply split, and everybody has their own media universe. They're, you know, they're all listening to Fox, we're listening to NPR. You know, there's increasingly little space for the sense that we are one nation. And so this phrase pops up, echoing through your ritual gesture and this bizarre outburst that has the uncanny sense of some kind of dream logic emerging.
Yeah,
in
totally dreamy.
This spectacle. It's a very interesting place to see how these things echo. Well, I mean, just because it is an interesting phrase and because you got some grief for it on your site, tell me why you would use that phrase, even though the concept of God and the idea of God and the nation is such a fraught idea. Why for you is that still, is that a place to kind of honor?
Well, sure. I mean, this was, you know, the contention that the gentleman had. He said that, you know, the founding fathers had used God in that sense to cause all this problem. And that's, you know, a lot of people use the philosophical concept of God to justify all manner of terrible acts. And then they're justified and, you know, vindicated and all that. But for me, that's just not how I see it or use it. I mean, people seem to have this concept, I think largely in part due to Christianity, although I don't know, I might be wrong, it's just my opinion, that God is this old white man with a beard sitting on a throne that, you know, just doles out judgment and plays favorites and has all these, like, you know, things like Israel is the government of God and all this stuff. But that's, you know, nowhere did it say anything like that. Those are just people's judgments. So for me, the reason I keep God in there, because I'm trying to transcend all of that stupid philosophy and politics and the way that other people have used it and return it to a source of purity of that idea. Because for me, God is energetic, and it's about unification of consciousness. So if we're trying to unify the country, for me, I'm using God to try to help that consciousness have everybody, like, kind of get on the same level. So
yeah,
that's kind of
like
where I was coming from.
You haven't succumbed to the deep cynicism that is so easy to do. I mean, I wrestle with it back and forth myself. I find myself slipping into, you know, very cynical, as opposed to pessimistic. Pessimism is one thing, but cynicism is another. And so that's part of what you see in this woman's outburst. Because, I mean, we can get into some odd details about it, but in terms of the recordings that we heard, she's clearly saying it's not one nation under God, because there's some kind of split, and we need to be serving Jesus Christ, and the Freemasons were the one, you know, that shouldn't have been doing the Constitution. And so the way that I interpreted it wasn't entirely clear. What the way it seemed to be interpreting is that she was, expressing a Christian sentiment, one that said basically you can't serve two masters, and implied somehow that the Freemasons were part of the dark
right.
forces.
And so this is where it was equally epic, Eric, was because essentially what she did in her outburst was an exorcism. She called out demons in her mind, which were the Freemasons. So she ascribed the demons in the government to a specific group of people, namely the Freemasons, and then she invoked the name of Jesus Christ in an attempt to cast them out. Now, if that's not an exorcism, I don't know what is. So
yeah, what also came to me when I saw that is just, you know, realizing that on the level of people's imagination, and I don't mean it in a limited sense. I mean the world that they charge with their desire and their belief and their hopes and their fears, the world that they fill and that we all fill with different models of ultimate reality, which some of us for some of us is religious, for some of us is other images, you know, that you could suddenly see and feel this kind of tremendous presence of this kind of fearful Christian energy. And yet the gesture, for me anyway, this sort of like this break, because it's just so frustrating, it's so depressing, it's so broken, it's so angry, it's so stupid. That
yeah.
the only kind of, that was like, oh, wow, someone's actually being rational by having this irrational break where you speak some kind of florid, dreamlike vision of God on one side and Freemasons on the other. But I can it's like, yeah, sure, that felt real for a moment, you know?
If you take out all the God talk that she has in there, essentially what she's doing is saying, you guys are acting like jackass, like pull it together, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a very rational statement under the circumstances.
But, of course, this being our moment where the circulation of media is so intense and there's so many people watching, and anytime anything peculiar happens on the political stage and it's filmed, almost inevitably there are strange ruptures and cracks in the media representation that become the place for people to start finding clues and implications of different levels of control and power. And here we have a great one. This you just sent me this link this morning.
Yeah, so now it gets epicer.
Yeah, it gets more bizarre.
Well,
because
I know it's still not over. We
No.
Have
and it's very interesting. So just to kind of get us up to speed, the original clips that you could go if you were saying, oh, I want to see this lady, what she's talking about. Da da da. You go and you see the sort of standard camera that's facing all of the House members as they mill about, you know, doing their voting, and you see her get on front of the podium, and then you hear this stuff that we've been talking about Freemasonry and One Nation Under God. But then it turns out that what we are hearing was actually recorded later, after she was ejected from the house, and she's going into some elevator, and you can see that in the footage that's where that stuff comes from. And then because they didn't have the audio for her rants, they spliced it. Somebody along the way at Fox or whoever spliced in her rant, her later rant, her elevator rant, onto the images that we see in the house, which is a very peculiar thing to do in the first place.
Who would make that decision? I mean, she was saying something on the podium, but the recording that they put on there is not what she was saying. And there's video. Some journalist had videotaped her saying those words by the elevator. You can see her face with the words coming out of it by the elevator. So that video exists. So it's like you can see that it obviously someone purposefully overdubbed it with
right.
wrong audio.
I mean, it could be simply that they have this video of her doing her initial rant, and then she's pulled out of the room. And then they got audio later, and they're like, well, she's just ranting. It makes much better footage if we splice in the rant by the elevator onto the video that we have that we don't have any
right.
actual audio for. So I can
yeah.
see that. That doesn't seem...
That's true.
That doesn't seem so surprising to me. But what is more interesting to me is, since that seems pretty plausible... what's more interesting to me is the way that the fact that there's some kind of gap, that there's some kind of construction, that you can see the somewhere along the line some media person made this decision to build this image that isn't true. The fact that there's some kind of construction there then gives all the room in the world to everyone who wants to see this as some kind of creepy mind control event or some kind of
right.
you know, Twilight language message that's using the news in order to, you know, trigger people and, you know, that whole kind of world of mind control. But it's almost
and also it's important to state too that one person, whatever media source it was, made that decision based on whatever it was. Like you said, it could have been that they thought that would just make for a more exciting story. Then every other media source did the exact same thing. So to me, it more so than mind control, interestingly, it shows how lazy
yeah.
the media is, because everybody else just took that clip, and it shows how easy it is if you wanted to put out this information. All it takes is one clip, man, and then everyone just cuts and pastes it.
Yeah,
like, none of the other media sources obviously did their work. They literally were so lazy, they just took the clip and put it out.
And lazy, and not only lazy, there's also a time pressure. I mean, that's what's so
yeah.
weird. I mean, one of the many things that's weird about media, news media today, is there's such an enormous pressure on time, on being
right.
first, on getting there, on getting on it, that there's no way that you can even imagine having some editorial force somewhere go, hey, we should hold off on that for a second until we really back it up. You know, it seems a little,
right.
you know, no one even has, they're like, no, get it up there. We need that to
they
be there
tweet
as quickly
it.
As possible.
Yeah, they got to tweet it, man, so they
yeah.
can't check
and
it out.
And that helps create the surreal situation. I mean, surreal almost like literally, like in the sense that there's some real elements, things that actually happened, and then through the very need to report the quote-unquote news, small distortions or errors or, odd editorial decisions like this one get quickly magnified into the real that's not quite real anymore. And
right.
then people are, you know, and that's the world where we're trying to, you know, understand what's going on, what's actually happening in politics. So it totally makes sense to me that there's going to be this zone of conspiracy and mind control and weird synchronicities and demons and exorcism, and that whole world is like it's inextricably linked to the ordinary rational news mediated reality now, and you see it's just part of the scene.
Yeah, and I think it will be there until there's some the problem is that the conspiracy folks have the luxury of time to sit and go through all the footage and find all the mistakes and do the research. Like, this is what we have the general media trying to get it out there as fast as possible, like trying to get, you know, being lazy, being quick, being hazardous. And then, you know, most of the conspiracy theory folks, probably with some exceptions, are pretty nerdy, dorky people. So they're sitting there going over all the stuff, putting a lot of effort into it. So if we could just get, like, some kind of closer spectrum there where it's not those two extremes, if we had a media source that actually could, you know, do what some of these conspiracy theory dudes are doing, I think it would kind of solve a lot of that problem.
Yeah, I think you're really right to point out this element of time. You know, that
yeah.
that the the professionals have no time, and then the sort of, I don't want to call them amateurs, but the sort of researchers who are either they have jobs with time or they're unemployed or they're partly employed and, you know, and they're obsessed with the internet, they have all the time in the world. I mean, the amount of work that people, I don't know if you dipped into the Boston bombing kind of conspiracy world,
totally.
but the amount, not to bring up that topic and the whole getting, we're not going to dive into it, but just to draw attention to the amount of work and intellectual work that went into sort of corroborating different kinds of videos, making them, you know, match up a certain timeline and zeroing in on these gaps and inconsistencies and these trying to interpret these strange but very, very tightly focused movements of certain bodies. And it was there was something, again, very surreal. It's like if you drill down into the representations of reality far enough, things get weird. And that just seems like almost a rule of media that now is determining how people interpret these political events. And it's like you have to kind of be familiar with magical thinking on some level to be able to navigate this world that is now part of our consensus reality.
Yeah. I mean, and I think if you can't, you know, catch up to that, you're just, I mean, what's your option, you know? Like, what's, you either have to be there at the event, or, I mean, because this is the problem, right? We can't, as people, be everywhere at one time, so we're reliant upon these crazy systems to provide knowledge for us. So, you know, it kind of puts us in a very strange predicament.
Absolutely. Well, I want to explore more of this. We're going to take a break now. Maybe when we come back, we can talk more about divination and synchronicity. You're listening to Expanding Mind. I'm your host, Eric Davis, and we're just having a chat today among the co-hosts, Maja and me, talking about divination and the political synchronicity. And we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. This is Maja Daou. I'm here today with Eric Davis, and we are chatting about some mysteries and trying to just look at how interesting they are, and specifically surrounding the phenomenon of synchronicity and divination. You mentioned before the break, Eric, to talk a little bit about that. And for me, I view synchronicity and divination as pretty tightly bound together because I do divination as a profession. And what I find is divination works through synchronicity. That's like its mechanism, right? So for me, I became very interested in synchronicity and had to be like, well, okay, what is this? Like, how does it work? Because everything I was doing had synchronicity just embedded in the whole deal. It was part of the deal. So when I got into the topic of synchronicity, for me personally, I feel like you said, like synchronicity is when weird stuff happens, like what happened to your friend, and people try to find some cause or like to relate it back, like, oh, well, this happened and it made this happen, right? If two things happen like that at the same time and they seem to be related, people get all caught up in trying to see, like, purpose or cause or, like, you know, it's a sign from God that I have to kill you, or there's a lot of that going on. People will interpret omens and synchronicities in this very self-serving, egotistical manner. Like, if there's a synchronicity and they're about to do something, they'll say, oh, this is a sign from God that I have to do this, right? A good example of that I like to bring up, talking about politics, to go back to the government, George Bush Sr., before we went to war with Iraq, said he received an omen and a message from God that he should do the war, right? Essentially, he experienced a synchronicity and attributed it to him personally receiving that message from God, and the results of that was going to a war. Now that happens a lot through divination. People will draw the cards, will be like, should I break up with my boyfriend, right? they draw some tarot cards. Oh, it's a sign from God. I have to break up with my boyfriend, right? But for me, again, I'd like to just say, when synchronicities happen, it's more of a show of a greater connecting consciousness. It's more like the Matrix to me, right? That not that it's about you personally, but oh my God, don't forget, like, you're tied in with all this other stuff. Like, well, everything is connected.
That's a really good point. I mean, that's kind of what I'm trying to say on a kind of media politics level, is that the message, if there's some kind of curious synchronicity, often the message is just that synchronicities happen, that things line up. And they line up because there are ways, it seems as if there are ways in which things are connected much more richly and robustly than we normally perceive in our ordinary lives, where we think of ourselves as agents moving through, making decisions within a reasonably well-mapped world that's kind of on its own in a lot of ways. But of course, on multiple levels, you know, biophysical levels, energetic levels, photonic levels, mental levels, there's these profound connections between things.
Yeah.
And we can't really live in that world because it's almost too much. And I think that synchronicities are sort of signs of those deeper connection. So that's really the message, that things are more deeply connected. And what happens with the reason that they're one of the reasons that magical thinking is stirred up by our current situation is because the fact that things are connected is more and more literally, technically the case, because we are actually, when we're using our mobile devices to link into Facebook, we are more connected than we were before on a certain level.
Yeah.
Like, it may have been implicit before, and now it's explicit. It's in our devices, and everything is being recorded, and those recordings can be attacked or analyzed by networks of people. That's the thing about, like, if you looked at, again, the Boston bombing, and maybe this event will breed not just one guy in his room, you know, analyzing it, but hundreds, thousands of people putting their data together to develop these different kind of scenarios of what happened. So it's the fact that things are connected, more, they resonate more, and these resonances take on this surreal quality. So I wanted to just ask you, because you do work professionally, and how much and how, like, you have people coming in, they have real problems, they're suffering, their lives are difficult, boyfriend, you know, it's boyfriends, girlfriends, job, parents, money, you know, stuff that is always going to animate our lives. And then they turn to oracles, they turn to you. How do you sort of encourage people, not, you know, even at the same time you're saying, look, the astrology or the cards can help illuminate your situation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're not sitting there going, I have the answers, or the cards have the answer. This is very clear. You must do this or that. It's not about that. It's about deepening the kind of the richness of potential meanings. But at the same time, people want answers. So how do you balance that?
Right. For me personally, I face a difficult struggle because a lot of psychics, and no offense to them, the way they perform a reading, in my opinion, is not cool. The person comes in with some terrible situation, and they are putting all of their faith into the reader to tell them what to do. They want to hear, you know, he cheated on you, leave, right? They don't want just, like, to be involved in the situation. It's like, I see it like people going to the doctor and just wanting a pill and not taking any kind of participatory role.
Oh, that's a wonderful analogy.
Right? They don't care what's wrong with them or what they can do to fix it. They just want the drugs. So I think a lot of people do that when they go to psychics. And it's okay. I don't blame them. They're having a hard time. They just want relief from suffering. Relief from suffering is what drives them to do that, just like the person that just wants the pill, you know? So for me, when I do readings, I make them work. I give them homework. They have stuff to do. They got to, like, figure it out and make changes. So I will not only give them the information that I see coming forward, but then I make them think, like, they have to participate. I'm like, well, what can you do? What does this mean? What part, why did this happen? So I like to look at the past, the present, and the future, even though everyone only wants to know the future, but they forget it's part of everything. So I have to look at what led to this? What part did you have to play in it? What can you do to alleviate it? And also what's going to happen, because personally, I've experienced having readings of the future and having being, if it's depending on the situation, a lot of times people can have input into that. You know, I'm not a fatalist. I believe in free will. So part of the situation with explaining these synchronicities to people is like, well, okay, so this crazy thing happened. The cards have synchronistically told you this crazy information. And by the way, I've had insane experiences with the divination. Just the synchronicities are insane, like down to the words, like on the level of the under God business. So they'll use the same darn words, especially in I Ching. So it's not just tell me what's going to happen in the future, but it's, you know, what are you going to do with that? Because guess what? What if the future says the world is going to die? Okay, well, what does that mean? What are you going to do about that? What does that mean to you? I think it's important to investigate those aspects of it as well.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing from you is that it's, though there is guidance there, the guidance comes through engaging it productively and practically. And it's also about, it seems to me, about reading the world. And as we know,
yeah.
There's no purely literal meaning of anything. You know, any text,
any
painting, even like road signs, any sign is never just itself. There's always levels to it, and it resonates on multiple levels. And that's just the reality of the symbolic world that we live in. And it seems like divination is an invitation to read events, symbols, the connection between them in a different way, to invited into a richer, more resonant world that does have elements of magical thinking, of connection, you know, mysterious connections between A and B, or symbolic overlays, or the kind of synchronicities when you hear a word and then an event happens. They're invitations into a world where there are these multiple layers of meaning, and that we are partly making those layers, but they also come to us. They're also, you know, it's also a world that we're being invited into. So that makes a sense to me, and it reflects my own experience. I mean, even though I'm very skeptical in some ways, because I think it's really important to maintain that attitude. So most things that have happened to me that are very peculiar, like you say, I just kind of keep them in a certain zone of ambiguity. But they're so extraordinary that there's no way I could deny the fact that sometimes the world looks like a magical reality where words and events are occurring as if they're a kind of story that's unfolding through you, and that might be crazy. You know, that might be. I mean, in some ways, I think that a lot. Yes, what I mean, it's almost like there's craziness in the world. There's craziness in us, and it's going to find a place one way or the other. And that these ways of approaching things are like ways to like deal with it productively and coherently.
And you know, for me, like you said, I have a high degree of skepticism even in my divination readings. Okay, if someone comes in and they ask, like, for example, I had a gal, she came in, she asked, when is my brother gonna die? Okay, he was ill, he's been suffering from this disease, he's in bed. She wants to know, when's he going to die? So I get a very clear answer from the cards. It was very specific. It was 3 days was the answer. So I'm like, well, okay, I don't want to, like, how can you say that to someone? Like, well, he's going to die in 3 days. That's a pretty big little bomb to drop on someone. So I ask it again, and then I ask it again. And this is what I like about divination systems is test them, man. Like, you know, people think they can only ask about the future, but you can ask about things that have already happened. You know, ask about the past so that you can get an idea of what's the story, what's it talking to you. Be skeptical. If you get an answer from a divination system, check it out. You know, if you ask about your health, ask the cards, ask the doctor, ask your friends, like ask all kinds of different arenas for knowledge. But even specifically with the synchronicities, it's not necessarily, even though it's crazy, you can test the crazy. And that's one of the things that I like about it, right? Test
that's great. Crazy. It's, you can test the crazy.
Yeah. And then, you know what? I mean, in that particular case, I got a message on my Facebook, sure enough, 3 days later, he died exactly 3 days after. So I'll use it. I call it evidence, right? So even though there's all these seemingly insane things, I try to, as much as I can, I try to implement the scientific method on it, right? Test it. People always say, like, oh, this is all faith-based stuff. No way, man. Why? There's no reason why you can't include rationality and crazy stuff.
Well, in a way, that's what a lot of these... That's why they're systems. They're ways of thinking. They are modes of thought that have their own coherence because they have their they build systems based on their own axioms. And even and you know I don't want to get into the whole skeptical debate and the way in which like I can reproduce skeptics in my head. I know the arguments, so I'm able to see the way in which we build meaning based on some rickety foundations and some kind of assumptions that may not really pan out. But I'm not interested in going there right now because I think it's more interesting to emphasize the way in which there is a kind of intelligence going on in these things. And that's why they're systems. That's why, you know, like, let's take the I Ching. It's not just, you know, a magic eight ball. It's a complicated numerical system that has a lot of interlocking parts that's mathematical. And then it also has these layers of poetry, of oracle, of images. But there's a great deal of systematic coherence, and the more you study it, the more you see these very subtle interrelationships, like a beautifully designed mechanical structure that is filled with images of the world. I mean, they're these fascinating constructions that are complicated. And I think that's partly how they invite in both the magical correspondences and a kind of thinking that is maybe not purely rational, but it has elements of probing, of maintaining a kind of a little skeptical or maintaining a ground of pragmatism about how and why you're doing it. And if you don't do that, that's when people go kind of kooky, or they get lost in delusional belief systems, or they become unable to process reality. And that's a question for you. Since you are in the business in some sense of magical thinking, or using it or engaging with it, sometimes you must have people come to you who aren't just looking for answers, but are on the verge of what we'll just call, for the sake of simplicity, craziness.
I've had clients that were, you know, diagnosed with mental illness. So you can literally say that they're crazy, okay? And
how do you try to ground them even as you sort of see the deeper... You know, like if you're totally a skeptic and you have someone like someone with mental illness come in, but they're interested in the cards and all these synchronicities are happening. If you're totally like psychiatrist land, you're like, okay, the whole thing is delusional. That's their delusional belief system. But if you recognize that these things have tremendous power and meaning and can be incredibly insightful, then you're like, well, yeah, you're seeing. It's not like it's totally wrong, but you're going off the deep edge. You know, it's like it's such a tricky place. So how do you manage that when you're dealing with people like that?
For me personally, and I've had, like I said, multiple clients that are diagnosed with severe mental illness from schizophrenia to severe bipolar to straight up hallucinations to, you know, grand mal seizures. I mean, these are people with serious mental issues, okay? I feel, I'm not like trying to say I'm perfect, but I think if they go to a reader and use these systems, and like I said, the reader does it in such a way, like I mentioned before, where they're like apocalyptic and fatalistic, and they just give this information to people, I think that is dangerous for anyone with a mental issue, okay? But in my personal experience with readings with these people, they've all had total healing moments. And I've known people that are schizophrenic. I have one friend that was diagnosed schizophrenic. He came to me. I didn't know him at that point. We became friends throughout this process. And he didn't want to go on meds. He was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I obviously have this problem. I hear voices. They tell me to do bad things. But I don't want to take medication. And he was looking for alternative techniques of what he could do to deal with his situation. And I introduced him to I Ching. I told him about these different shamanic methods. And this was like, boy, maybe 8 years ago. And he still never went on medication and has had profound healing and is now a very famous artist. So,
wow, that's a wonderful, wonderful story.
Right?
You know, one of the things I've been thinking about, and it's a whole other topic, and we only got a couple of minutes here, but I do want to throw it in, is that I think one of the healthy things that's happening now in society is that, one of the few, is that we are growing more and more, we recognize more and more that there are a wide variety of minds out there, and some of them are very different, but that holding on to the neurotypical model of as being the only one that's valid is really absurd, and we're seeing this very strongly with people on the autistic spectrum. We're recognizing that the autistic spectrum is extremely complicated, and that what we used to think of as just being, you know, people that would be labeled as retarded or as completely cut off or whatever have very rich, dynamic mental lives and are quite creative and productive often in certain zones. And so we actually are being called to have a broader conversation with more different kinds of minds. And I think that's also true, at least I hope that's also true, for people who have schizophrenia, paranoia, who see hallucinations, that world, if we want to think of it as magical thinking or mental illness, it doesn't even really matter from what I'm saying, that world is also part of our world. It's part of our social reality, and communication and opening up different ways of managing that world rather than medicating it and putting it in a box.
It's a state of consciousness. You know, it's a real one of the statistical possibilities of a human state of consciousness, right? And like you said, look at these people that are diagnosed in that manner. What are their options? There's no cure. Currently, in the scientific world, there's no cure for mental illness. They only can get medication. That's their option. That's it. You know? So in my mind, why not try this stuff? Like, what's it good? Like, the worst, what could happen? What's the worst possible thing? Is it worse than being sedated on lithium for your entire life? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting topic, and I'm glad that one of the things we've tried to do in the show, and we got to wrap it up, but what the show has been devoted to in some ways is to be able to ride the edge of these other worlds and try to understand them, try to make connections, try to speak it and not just pathologize it. So thanks very much, Maja. Very interesting conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, from Maja and me to all you out there, keep your minds open.